Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom. We're now on TuneIn as well, working on Google Play. That's going to happen soon. You can do that. Leave us a 5-star review. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Send us questions there. If you have any basketball questions or advertising inquiries, email them to us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Scores. Cody, Dwayne Wade was officially introduced as a Bull on Friday afternoon.
And he had full command of the room, Sean, and it felt completely different, everything about it, Dwayne Wade commanding the room, than last season when the Bulls were literally a mess at sometimes in the locker room.
Yeah.
And just a mess with their quotes. There was always so much confusion with the Bulls last year. Just Derrick Rose saying things that didn't make sense. Guys not being on the same page. Guys saying different things. Dwayne Wade is here. He's a Bull, and he knows what's going on. He knows what he wants. He was prepared for every question that was thrown out there, basically. He was funny. He was serious. He was introspective. And it's cool to be at the press conference. I thought Dwayne Wade was cool. I think Bulls fans are going to like him.
Yeah, and it completely just changed the dynamic of covering this team, just everything about it. Like, you can just tell, because he was there, and obviously his family was there with him. Gabrielle Union was sitting front row at one point. Dwayne made a reference to the fact that she was going to follow all of us on social media and go at us if she didn't like anything that we say. And then she stood up and says, yeah, that's true, I'm going to do that. And so, like, he got the family there, and it's, like, between all of the spotlight that Dwayne Wade has been under with, you know, the big three in Miami, and he's been to the finals a bunch of times, and, you know, with how big he's played at the Olympics, with how big of a star he is in China, and also just with how famous his wife is in her own right, like, they've dealt with this so much. Like, this is one of the biggest days in Bulls history since Michael Jordan retired, introducing a guy like Dwayne Wade. But for the Wade family, this was just nothing to them, and they're such pros the way they handle this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's an icon, okay? He's no longer... I know people keep using the word superstar. Like, he's not a superstar on the basketball court anymore. He's good basketball
player. He's still really good.
He can ramp his game up when he needs to in moments to still be really good.
Yeah.
He's not going to do that for 82 consecutive games in the season. But this is a guy that is a superstar, just the whole package, culturally, on the court, off the court, combining that. And I think that one of the most, the biggest moments, most telling was, he was asked, predictably, as you would expect, whose team are the Bulls, which, practically speaking, isn't a huge deal on the court, but it is a big talking point off the floor amongst fans, the media, and having a leader in the locker room, someone who sets the tone whose team it is a big deal for how your team gets along and just the chemistry. And he was asked whose team it is, and he first joked, it's Jerry Reinsdorf's team.
Right.
Ha ha ha. Everyone's like, yeah, that's a good
one. See, that's
the
thing. He was right there. Like, you know that he was briefed about that, and he had that zinger just lined up.
Absolutely. But then what he did, he went on from that, and he explained, well, it's Jerry Reinsdorf's team. But on the floor, in the locker room, he says, so this isn't going to be a story all year. I'm here to tell you now, this is Jimmy Butler's team.
And he did it by referencing back, you know, in 2004 Shaq. When the Heat traded for Shaq from the Lakers, and this was Dwayne Wade's second or third year in the league. And Wade said, you know, that what Shaq did when he first got there was say this is Dwayne Wade's team. And so he was kind of making a reference to that. And that just kind of drives home, like, this is a guy who has been through every single thing the Bulls might face this season in terms of personality dynamics, in terms of just everything they might have on the court, off the court. Dwayne Wade has been through this role so much before.
He's played with Shaq, who's one of the biggest goofballs probably in NBA history, right? And then he played with LeBron, who is, in a way, unlike anyone else, other than the decision misstep by LeBron. He has carried himself so well, so professionally his whole career. But LeBron can be a prima donna sometimes. I mean, there's those subtle messages on Twitter.
Subtweets,
And I know there weren't subtweets so much in 2011 when they got together, but just...
Was LeBron even on Twitter yet then?
There was the same parallel just involved. I mean, in person, I'm sure LeBron could be like that the same way, you know?
Well, the other thing is that they had the, you know, the Miami Big Three were kind of the original three alphas.
Yeah.
Because, and you have to remember, it took a while, it was a little bit awkward at first, but eventually, like, LeBron, they were able to convince Chris Bosh to sacrifice. Chris Bosh had been the number one guy when he was in Toronto, and then when he goes to Miami, he's clearly the number three guy. They got everybody to buy in. LeBron and Wade eventually figured out how to share the ball. I think the fact that Dwayne Wade is going to be in here, if there's ever any issues with whose team it is or who's going to be sharing the ball, Dwayne Wade can be like, look, I played with LeBron James. Like, I deferred to him. Like, you're not LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, or you're not, or Rondo, or whoever.
Yeah, I think what this gets back to a little bit more, though, is a self-policed locker room by the players, which is what you always want.
Right.
But at the same time, a coach does have a role in this. Now, Sam Smith, legendary Hall of Fame basketball writer, writes for Bulls.com, now wrote for the Tribune for years. I was talking to him the other night, and he made the point, and he wrote this in his book, too, The Jordan Rules, I think.
Yeah.
And it became more true in the next 5 years after that book was written in the early 90s there. Phil Jackson never had to do much in the locker room. He didn't have to police it. He didn't have to babysit anyone. That was what Michael Jordan did. Things went down. Jordan took care of it. Everyone fell in line because of Jordan. And I know Jordan is the greatest player in NBA history, probably. But at the same time, Dwayne Wade can serve in that role. Like, maybe the locker room doesn't have to be an issue at all for Fred now. He can just ignore it completely because Dwayne Wade's in there, Jimmy Butler's in there, and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler appeared on Friday, at least, to be on the same page, Dwayne hitting all the right notes. Jimmy Butler was the only player I think I saw there, but Jimmy was there. I think he just got done with the workout.
Of course.
Came and watched the entire 45-minute press conference. He stood just to the right of all the chairs and was over there, and Dwayne referenced him a couple times. Jimmy was over there smiling.
Rocking a muscle shirt.
Yep, absolutely, tank top on, and standing next to Michael Reinsdorf, Bulls president. But Jimmy was there, and he was intently listening to the whole thing. But I think maybe that self-police locker room, maybe the biggest deal initially about adding Dwayne Wade is Fred Hoiberg can just basketball everything.
Yes, and I think the fact that, Dwayne Wade is who he is, I know, obviously, you just talked about the Jordan stuff, and obviously Michael Jordan is kind of in a class all his own, but Dwayne Wade, as far as current players in the league, you'd be hard-pressed to find five guys in the entire league who command as much respect from teammates and from players around the league for what they've accomplished and for the way they've been a professional their whole career and the way they've carried themselves and everything. Dwayne Wade has just checked all of those boxes throughout his career. He's been the man on a championship team. He's been also willing to take a step back when there was somebody clearly better than him on his team, like LeBron James. And, obviously Jimmy Butler isn't LeBron, but in terms of where they are right now and who's in the prime of his career and stuff, Jimmy Butler is still probably the best player on the Bulls right now. And Wade, he's willing to do that when he had LeBron and Bosh there. He'd be willing to do it now, or so he says. I think it's going to be just, for anything, we were talking about earlier, the locker room last year. Guys were so checked out. There was the tension. The Rose Butler stuff was overblown, but there was tension between Jimmy and some other guys on the team, Joakim Noah or, some of the other veterans.
Powell could get annoyed with Jimmy.
Powell could get annoyed with a lot of guys. Powell, you want to talk about a guy who came from, Powell is a guy who came from, he comes to Chicago, the summer of 2014 after they don't sign Carmelo Anthony, and he turned down, I think he had bigger offers from San Antonio and Oklahoma City, and he had a bigger offer from the Lakers, and he turned those down and went to Chicago because he really felt like they were a championship situation, and then they weren't, you could just tell, halfway through that season, he was just like, look, I played with Kobe, I've won two championships, this is, what are we doing here? And so, he's gone now, Dwayne Wade is the kind of guy, he's at the point in his career, he doesn't have to prove anything to anybody.
Yeah, and I want to hop in with this real quick. Here's where Dwayne Wade's stature is in the NBA.
Yeah.
From his perspective, in free agency, he dealt with Heat owners Mickey Arison and Nick Arison. He did not deal with Pat Riley. And Pat Riley is one of the most influential, powerful, and respected figures in the NBA. I think he has 9 championship rings between his time as coach, executive, and player.
Yeah.
He led the Heat to 3 championships in the Dwayne Wade era. I should say he built the team, at least.
Yeah.
The architect of it. And Dwayne Wade is such that he didn't hear from Pat Riley in free agency. And from Dwayne's perspective, he didn't need to. He said, he made clear, I have no rift with Pat Riley. We're okay. I don't know if I buy all of that.
I will, spoiler alert, I don't.
Why is that?
I mean...
I also wonder if Pat Riley played zero role in Dwayne Wade's free agency, because it's a little weird that Riley would do just nothing at all. But my original point was that Dwayne Wade didn't feel the need that he had to go deal with Pat Riley because, hey, like he said, I'm here at the table with the owners, the guys that pay the bills. They want me back. That's good enough for me to hear. Now, maybe there's more to that, but that's the Dwayne Wade public front, the public face he puts on, and maybe it's not 100%. I think there's more gray in this than it is black and white, but at the same time, that's where he views himself. I'm talking to the owners. That's what's going down. So I just found that an interesting parallel of where he's at. And I mean, can you imagine if in Chicago, like, Dwayne Wade's like, nah, Gar, I'm not dealing with you in this free agency thing. I'm going to go see Mr. Reinsdorf. Now, at the same time, that brings up, we laugh at that. You just laughed at that, Sean. But, like, Dwayne Wade's one of the most influential figures in the Bulls organization now. Like, Gar Forman waited to start the press conference because Dwayne Wade told him, hey, we're waiting until my wife gets here. And then the Bulls are like, not Gar, but the Bulls were like, go ahead, go for it. And Gar's like, I'm not sure. And Dwayne's like, no, we're not starting this press conference on Friday. That's how that Dwayne Wade era started. At the press conference, Gabby Union was about 2 or 3, 4 minutes late into the press conference, and they were trying to live stream this, and CSN was carrying it live, I believe, on TV, and they waited. They didn't start it. They waited till she got there, and obviously she's an actress, has been in front of a lot of crowds before, but she walked up there while it was dead silent, sat down, and we started it. But it was really funny. But I'm just saying, that's where Dwayne Wade's influence is.
Right, and you could just tell. I mean, talking to different Bulls personnel over the last couple days at USA practice and at the press conference yesterday, you can just tell how excited everybody is to get a guy like Dwayne Wade. Even if he's 34 and kind of at the tail end of his career, they've never signed. I mean, they had Michael Jordan, the greatest player of all time, but they drafted Michael Jordan. It wasn't like they convinced him to come as a free agent. In the past, they've gone after all the big-name free agents. They went after Tracy McGrady in 2000. They didn't get him. They went after LeBron, Bosh, and Wade in 2010. They didn't get any of those guys. They went after Carmelo Anthony in 2014. They didn't get him. And, you know, they finally got, and I know, again, Dwayne Wade is not the player he was in 2010, but he's still one of the guys that moves the needle on that level, and the Bulls got him as a free agent, and that's such a big thing for the organization.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because if it works, it's going to be a big deal and help them attract free agents next summer, the one after, just even if he doesn't stay more than 2 years, just to restore the luster a little bit, restore some pride. But if the flip side of this, there is a flip side, a downside. If Dwayne Wade comes in and they don't play well on the basketball court, and then there's lots of drama between the front office, the players, the coaches, all that stuff, and Dwayne Wade realizes how crazy this is, how much of a mess it could potentially be if that does come to fruition.
He's got a player option his second year.
That's very true. That's very true. Like, it can also have a downside and backfire in that sense. Like, if you can't get along with Dwayne Wade, he's just going to be out of town. You know what I mean? And then he has so much respect, so much stature in the game, that then it looks worse on the Bulls than it did initially. So the Bulls, that's why they have to defer to Dwayne Wade here this coming season and let him set the tone and the lead.
Right, because, I mean, if Wade is not really feeling what's going on in Chicago, one thing that will be clear to everybody is that Dwayne Wade is not the problem. He has never been the problem. And even there's been, you know, there's been difficult locker rooms. Like things got kind of difficult with Shaq near the end.
Yeah.
The big three, kind of, there was tension early on. Never have I ever gotten the impression that Dwayne Wade has ever been anything but a pro and, like, a guy that, you know, tries to relate to his teammates. He's never a guy that complains. He's never a guy that is the problem. It's always somebody else that's the problem. And that's always the impression that I've gotten. So if there's something that happens in the locker room, it's more likely to be on Rondo or on Jimmy than it is on Wade.
Underrated subplot of this season, Dwayne Wade has reached that Kobe status. I feel like not full Kobe, not peak Kobe, but he's nearing that where I think as the season goes along, he'll say what he wants.
Yep.
Because he knows he's already won 3 championships. He's more influential than anyone else. There's not going to be repercussions. So he's going to be honest, upfront, truthful. And that could be really entertaining. And the other thing is, according to Dwayne, Gabby Union is just going to tell us what they're thinking anyway on Twitter.
Right.
And yell at people that she doesn't like the way they're talking about Dwayne. And this is the other...
I'm still waiting for that follow, by the way.
That's very true. I hope that would be awesome If maybe she hey, should Gab, follow, hey, you should follow at Locked On Bulls, and Gabby Union should.
Hey,
too.
Gabby, if you're listening to this, the door is always open. If you ever want to come on Locked On Bulls and be a guest, give us kind of the perspective of being Dwayne Wade's wife and being, you know, one of the most high profile NBA significant others, and just kind of the general life. You know, we would love to get that perspective. If you ever want to come on the show, we will drop everything to make it happen.
She sounds very opinionated. You know, I liked this.
I've been following her on Twitter since he signed here, and she's great. She's got opinions on the election. She's got opinions on the whole situation at Baylor with, you know, their investigation. Yeah. She's got opinions on stuff. It's great.
Yeah, and this was kind of a parallel to Jimmy Butler saying the other day he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. I was glad that Wade came out and said, yeah, I read what you're writing. I look at the headlines. I hear the sports talk. I know what's going down on social media. Like,
he made sure to say, yeah, I do have something left, and I see what you guys are writing.
Yeah, absolutely. So that'll be great to see. But I did want to get into a little more of the basketball fit too.
Yeah.
It was telling that he was asked, you know, Rondo, Butler, Wade, they're all subpar 3-point shooters. Dwayne Wade shot 16% on 3-pointers last year, which he was quick to point out. He's better than that.
He's better than that career number of
28. I don't think so, but he says he steps up in big moments, and he's had a lot of big moments. He did play better in the playoffs. But I want you to sit down, brace yourself for a second. If you're in the car, make sure you got the steering wheel held tight. Dwayne Wade made, get a load of this. I want you to guess in your mind, real quick, listeners, how many three-pointers he made total last season in 74 games.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm going to guess 20.
He made 7.
Wow.
He made 7 three-pointers.
He had that one game, four
regular season games last year. He was 7 of 44 on three-pointers.
He had that one game in the Raptors series in the second round where he just went off and hit like 4 threes.
Regular season, 7 three-pointers. Klay Thompson made 9 in a quarter one time when he scored 37 points to set the NBA record
for points
in a quarter.
In Wade's defense, he did explicitly say that as much as his son loves Stephen Curry, he is his son's dad, not Stephen Curry.
That's factually true. But he's made 45 three-pointers in the regular season in the last 3 seasons. The three-point shooting thing is a problem, which was why Dwayne was asked about it. And he did. He made a good point. He said, the Bulls aren't going to play that game. They're not going to get caught up in playing that game, which opens up another plot of this story. Like, Fred Hoiberg kind of wants to play that game. Dwayne Wade's saying, we're not going to play that game. But what Dwayne Wade said was, quote, what I'm going to do is play my game and play my game within the system and what the team needs from me. Last I checked, the ball has to go through the basket. I've been pretty successful putting it through the basket in my career. Jimmy has been pretty successful. He's going to be even more successful now. And Rondo is going to know how to make sure he gets everyone the ball in position to put it in the basket. Our job's just to play to our strengths. End quote. So that's Jimmy downplaying anything like the Warriors. He knows they're not like, or excuse me, Dwayne Wade, saying they're nothing like the Warriors. Everyone knows that. But they think they can be successful in this game, I guess, closer to the basket, mid-range.
Right.
This game that is nothing like what the NBA is trending toward now. So, Sean, what say you to all of that?
I mean, I think it's great that they're so optimistic about it. But you know, what this really is going to mean is, you know, a lot is going to depend on the development, because you can't run out a lineup with 0 credible 3-point threats. So this is, you know, a lot is going to fall on if this whole three alphas experiment is going to work with those guys not being great 3-point shooters. And you know, again, we've kind of established we both think that Rondo's 36% last year was kind of an outlier, and
yeah,
we don't know whether Jimmy is going to get back up to around league average like he was a couple of years ago versus what he struggled.
I think the silver lining, Jimmy, if he has more space, if he spots up a little more often because Dwayne Wade has attention, maybe he can do that. But that's a big deal for Jimmy to be able to do that. He needs to.
What I was going to say, the point I was going to make, was that so much more now is going to rest at the feet of some of their secondary players who are three-point shooters. If they do, as we've talked about what they're probably going to do, if they do start Nico Mirotic as power forward, he's got to knock down his shots. He can't. play, you know, the way he has, you know, throughout his two seasons in his career, where he'll have a game where he hits six threes, and then the next night he'll shoot like 1 for 8 from 3-point range. He's always been really streaky throughout his career. He needs to hit those consistently. Doug McDermott needs to be able to stay on the floor enough that he can shoot consistently. Denzel Valentine did not shoot well at Summer League, but he comes in with 3-point shooting as part as one of his skills at the NBA level, so he needs to be knocking down shots. So anybody that they have on the roster who can shoot threes needs to be able to shoot threes if they want to be able to play this game where Rondo and Wade and Butler aren't really shooting a lot of threes.
D-Wade was asked about how many minutes he's going to play, basically, and he played 30.5 minutes per game for the Heat last year, and he admitted that a couple seasons ago, when Eric Spoelstra first came to him with that, he was like, no, I'm not buying into that. And he wasn't a huge fan of it going into last season, but he thought it worked out, worked well. And he didn't put a number on it. He didn't say the Bulls are going to do the exact same thing the Heat did right there, 30, 31 minutes a game. But I would think that would be a good estimate or a good shooting point for the Bulls to kind of look toward, because Dwayne Wade doesn't obviously need to be playing 34, 35 minutes a game. He should do that if the Bulls are in close games. But he said he'll do what the team needs. He's not going to have a huge role. He at least indicated he's not going to have a huge role in a night-to-night push to Fred Hoiberg. He said Hoiberg can make those decisions. But, I mean, if the Bulls are in close games, he's going to want to be out there. If they're not in close games, I think they should scale back and rest him a lot more on nights that are blowouts in either direction.
Yeah, and I think they're going to probably be pretty smart about doing that. They're pretty aware of this kind of stuff. Last season, 2015-16, he played 30.5 minutes per game, which is by considerable distance the lowest minutes per game of his career. Yeah. And maybe as a result of that, maybe he just got lucky and stayed healthy. But as you know, he played the fewest minutes of his career, but also last year he played 74 games, which is the most minutes that he's played since the 2000
for a long time. Yeah.
The first time he's played over 70 games since the 2010-11 season.
Yeah, and that was the first year that LeBron was in Miami, obviously. Yeah. So that's just a kind of a range I think you should look at if you're the Bulls, 30, 32 minutes.
And the fact that they have Jimmy Butler, they don't have to rely on Wade to be the guy that carries them on offense every night, like the Heat kind of did this past year with, you know, obviously with LeBron gone and with Bosch out for a lot of the year. The Heat did have to rely on Wade a lot. The Bulls aren't going to have to because they have Butler and they have other guys that can score.
Yeah, and D-Wade joked that Jimmy Butler's the guy that can handle the 40-plus minutes per night, which he's done very often in his career. And, I mean, he had a busy Friday, too, because apparently it looked like he got done with a workout before the press conference, went to D-Wade's press conference. Friday evening, he walked across the street, Advocate Center, to the United Center, where he was a part of Team USA's ugly, I believe, 80-45 win over Venezuela in an exhibition tune-up ahead of the Olympics, which I believe opening ceremonies Friday night, and I believe the Americans start Saturday with their first pool play game against China. They have one more exhibition game Monday night. If you're listening to it today, we're recording on Sunday night. It's Monday night. They play Nigeria in Houston. But Jimmy was at the United Center, only had 4 points, did have the highlight of the night where he tipped a ball from, they were on defense from the free throw line. He tipped the ball really high in the air, really far down the court. Kyle Lowry retrieved it, was about to run out of bounds. He tipped it back to Jimmy, who caught it and dunked it, which was pretty cool, but otherwise an awful basketball game. The story of the night, Tom Thibodeau was back at the United Center. And I went up to my seat in pregame, like 15, 20 minutes before tip-off was slated. I didn't want to miss pregame introductions because I wanted to see if they were going to show Tom on the big screen, introduce him. I get up there, and I just started smiling and got really giddy when I saw that they were announcing the Venezuelan assistant coaches because I knew they were going to have to do it with Team USA. And indeed, they put Tibbs up there on the screen. He got a big ovation from the United Center crowd. Jimmy Butler got a bigger ovation, but it was a touching moment for Tibbs, and he acknowledged it with a short little wave. But the United Center faithful went crazy for Tibbs.
Absolutely, and as you would expect, I mean, a lot of fans were really unhappy when the Bulls fired him, and especially after the way last season ended up going with the first year under Fred Hoiberg, I think a lot of Bulls fans feel like the Bulls didn't make the best decision by firing Tom. Other than that, I mean, it seems like, I mean, you mentioned I wasn't at the exhibition game. I decided, KC and I both made the executive decision to go see Radiohead instead of doing that, and from the sounds of it, I think we made the right call there, but it sounds like there was some stuff in the post-game press conference with Jimmy at the podium with Coach K?
So,
Dolson on that.
So Jimmy and K come to the podium for the post-game press conference and have some basketball questions about the game, bigger picture stuff. But then Jay Cohen of the Associated Press asked a really good question, and he said, this one's for Jimmy. So he intended it directly looking at Jimmy, you know. Tibbs got a big ovation in pregame. Just what did you think of that, and what do you think it meant to Tibbs? And before Jimmy could answer, Coach K hopped in and intercepted the question intended for Jimmy. And this was interesting to me, because usually, once in a while, you'll have guys hop in and intercept a question right. for someone else. So it's not uncommon, but still, the question was for Jimmy. But Kay, who's a Chicago native and been coaching with Tibbs for years now on Team USA, looked like he really, really wanted to get asked about it. And he sensed that he maybe wasn't going to get asked about it, so he was going to intercept Jimmy's question. And he said, quote, I grew up in Chicago, and what you said about Chicago is so true. It's an amazing sports town that loves its athletes and coaches, and they should love Tom. Tom brought great basketball here when it was not going well. And then really injury rise again. With Derrick Rose, if he'd been healthy, there could have been another banner or two here. The fans realize that, and then things change. So now he's gone off, he holds no resentment. That last part is not true.
No.
Tibbs and the Bulls still hate each other. So that was coach speak from Kay. But I
By the way, did you catch the shot at Vinny Del Negro on there, too?
I didn't.
When he said, Tibbs came in and brought great basketball and things weren't going well. That's a shot at Vinny.
Well, the 41-41 was like the Vinny Del Negro special, right? Like the 8 seed. But Kay, I just thought, reading between the lines from all this, he seemed like he really wanted everyone to know how much Tom meant to the city and just how great of a coach he was. And I know that's what Team USA is. You got 12 stars, great coaches from the NBA and college ranks, and it's a love fest. Like, no one's going to say anything bad about anyone else when you're, 80-1 or something since Coach K took over, somewhere in that range. So that's not unexpected. So I understand, don't read into that too much, but at the same time, I feel like there's been kind of a change, I almost think. When Tibbs got fired, a lot of people didn't agree with it.
Right.
A lot of people were mad, but I think they did have an understanding of why it happened. Like, oh, I understand. Guy isn't getting along with his boss. Get him out of town. He never could get the Bulls over the hump, you know? XYZ. And then the Bulls are bad for a year, and you hear people just praising Tibbs for an entire year. And I think some of those people, they were initially like, oh, yeah, I understand. Get him out of town. Doesn't agree with the bosses. Now they're mad again. They don't care about that I understood part. They're like, Tibbs is going to kill it in Minnesota. And he loves his team there. Loves it. We've talked about this.
We do, too. Should.
But
Andrew Wiggins, Carl Anthony Towns, they got
everyone,
a great group there.
Everyone loves it. But, I mean, Coach K went up there, and it's like he wanted to remind you, hey, if it wasn't for injuries, Tibbs could be a championship coach. Maybe once or twice. I'm not in on that twice part. But, you know, if Derek doesn't get hurt in April 2012, they were the top seed that year, maybe they do win a championship before LeBron and D-Wade put it all together that season. Maybe it does happen in one of the other two ensuing years if they have more continuity. And, I mean, this is history, and it's a what-if. But, hey, you know, like, Kay wanted to say that and remind everyone of how much Tibbs meant. And then he went on to say he's the best as far as preparation and being a team player that he's ever seen in the coaching ranks. So just more over-the-top Tibbs love. And I got a kick out of it. I don't know. What do you think from afar, Sean?
I want to be... Was Gar in the building?
Gar was not seen. I did not see him during the game. I know he was in the United Center before the game. I don't know how long he stayed, where he sat, if he did or not, and stayed anywhere. But he did make an appearance in the building, but it wasn't a public face out there watching the game.
I'm sure he was made aware of Coach K saying what he said about Tibbs, and I'm sure he wasn't thrilled about
it. I'm sure he was. And that was some what-if history. And before we go here, I did want to point out, too, one more thing we skipped over in the D-Wade presser. He did confirm and say he was seriously interested in the Bulls back in 2010 when he was a 28-year-old free agent.
He gave a lot of backstory because he said
really good.
He said originally that the only team he worked out twice with before the draft was the Bulls, and he thought the Bulls were going to take him at number 7. He didn't even really know that the Heat wanted him when the Heat ended up taking him at number 5. And obviously the Bulls ended up taking franchise legend and house in the area owner and future Jersey retiree Kirk Heinrich.
You didn't throw in future assistant coach?
He's not already an assistant coach. I thought he was already an assistant coach.
We're going to have to track him down someday.
And then he's still out there. I'm surprised Tom hasn't picked him up yet.
That's very true. Very true. But D-Wade did say, like,
he said,
it was interesting because the Bulls' perspective is that if they could have unloaded Luol Deng and made some more maneuverings on the fringes, they could have had LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, is how they kind of, it seems to me, have sold it previously. Is that right?
Well, that's kind of because remember they had
that was before Derek signed his extension.
Well, yeah, that was the summer before Derek's MVP year.
Yeah.
So they traded Heinrich's contract to Washington
for nothing. Unloaded.
Right.
It
they just unloaded
space.
It and they got and so then they were looking at trying to move Deng. They had double max cap space. Wade said on that Friday
thing.
That he wanted to go to Chicago. That's really where
he
wanted to go. But the only team that had the cap space to add
to fit those three,
all three of them together, was Miami, and so they ended up just going to Miami.
Yeah, and he called an opportunity he couldn't pass up. So,
which, I mean, they got two titles out of it, so I think you can't say he didn't make the right decision
there.
He did,
and I'm sorry to turn the podcast to a sad place for Bulls fans talking about Coach K saying there was NBA titles that went unwon because Derek got hurt. And then they let Tibbs go.
Well,
and
hey,
now we're talking about how they missed Dwayne Wade back when he was in his prime.
Well, hey, now we've got the three alphas and Paul Zipser era upon us.
Oh, Paul Zipser sighting. I can't wait to see him, what he has to bring to it training camp. But yeah, so the one last note we wanted to make was the Bulls did sign Spencer Dinwiddie.
Non-guaranteed deal.
To a non-guaranteed deal since our last podcast, which means their roster's at 15 players, which basically means leading into the start of training camp in late September. This is where they are. We don't expect anything more to happen. We don't expect a lot of Bulls news, which is why we tell you, we warn you, we apologize. We're going to scale the podcast back a little bit, not quite five times a week here anymore. Obviously, Jimmy and the Olympics will still be a little bit to talk about. I'm sure there'll be some fun stuff we can get into. We'll take your questions, go question heavy for a few episodes every
week. Yeah, we're going to have, it's going to be more like, you know, we don't have a set schedule, but it's going to be more like 2 to 3 episodes a week as opposed to 5. Basically until training camp starts at the end of September, and then we'll get back to pretty much daily again.
Yep, and as always, you can email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com with basketball questions, advertising-related inquiries. Hit us up on Twitter at lockedonbulls, at Hyken, at Cody Westerland. Sean, where do they find us?
We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on Audio Boom, we're now on TuneIn. We're working on getting on Google Play. That's going to happen soon. We'll let you know when that happens. And you make sure you go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. And make sure you check out some of the other Locked On podcasts. There's some big ones that are getting announced this week on the NFL side. Most of the NBA teams are covered. Whatever team you're a fan of, there's something for you on the Locked On Podcast Network. All the other hosts also do a great job with it. So just check out a lot of those podcasts. If you find one that you're interested in, just go check it out. If you have friends that are fans of different teams, even if you're not a fan of that team, if you have a friend who happens to be an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, just tell them about Locked On Thunder with Fred Katz.
Yep, and thanks for listening. As always, until next time, take care, folks.